Hello, everyone. It's February 25th, 2015, and this is the Senate Committee on Workforce. And I'd like to welcome my colleagues who are here, but they're here all the time. I'd like to welcome all of you guests here to help us really celebrate CTE Day here in the Capitol. And just about everything we're going to talk about in this committee hearing is going to be related to career technical education. And, you know, just I just want to say up front that career technical education has become a growing concern and passion for this legislature over the last several years. And it is just so exciting for me personally and for many of us to see the growing support and growing investment in applied learning, career development, and everything that is related to what we call the new CTE, the new career technical education. And you know, much of today's hearing is going to be allowing us to hear just what is going on with career technical education. What have we been funding with our added investments through the revitalization grants? What more work needs to be done to make sure that these opportunities are offered to more and more Oregonians around the state? So with that, let's get started. I'm going to open our informational meeting on career and technical education. And we have an initial panel to sort of give us some background and give us a broad overview of CTE and also the related disciplines of STEM. So I'm going to call up Brian Krieg, Eric Meslow, and Laura Roach, please.
Chair Dambro, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Krieg. I do serve as the co-chair of the Oregon CTE Grant Revitalization Committee. And today, we're happy to be here today to even say happy CTE Day. 5 or 6 years ago, we weren't having this discussion. We had just started down that path. And the issue of CTE, career and technical education, it's education based on industry's needs, and that equals jobs. And this is critical to the state of Oregon. And the earliest elements of for CTE in the state, we've had CTE programs for a long time. And the situation is most of that is funded through federal funds. Up until 2011, really, we did not see the state itself putting direct funds into that program. It was what the school districts were putting to it on their own and with the federal funds assisting them on that. In 2009, there was a legislative task force put together, was chaired by then Representative Dembro, that looked at CTE and workforce issues and came up with a number of goals and identified issues and problems that were out there. We had the situation for Oregon's future of skilled workforce shortages. They were occurring then, they're still occurring now, and the need for skilled workers is going to continue to grow in the state. This was affecting and does affect many types of businesses and industries across the state. We have workforce diversity issues that we're not being able to reach out in the workforce at the moment. We have CTE decline was happening in our schools. We were seeing less and less shop classes across the state and facilities for them and the funding for them. And at the same time, we're seeing graduation rates that were continuing to decrease in the state, which leads to situations where if you're not graduating from high school, it's going to be very hard to get a decent job. And meanwhile, we've started importing skilled workers to Oregon. That's not a good equation. And so in 2011, the legislature passed the first revitalization grants, started a new program to help our schools out there pick themselves up, dust themselves off, get started again. The monies from the grants are for things like facilities and new equipment, teacher training. It's not backbone dollars for the teachers themselves, because these programs, these revitalization grants, needed to be just that, revitalization. They couldn't be an ongoing source of money for the folks. In 2011, we awarded 8 grants, and for about $1.8 million is what the legislature put to the programs at that point in time. It was a large, well, not a large coalition. Actually, it was a fairly small coalition that Labor Commissioner Avakian put together that helped push that first group through. Since that, many other groups have come to the table and started working with us on that. And, of course, then as we progressed down the line in 2013, we had about $9.5 million roughly that was put to the program. And in 2014, we had another $2 million added to it, and we were able to add another 8 grants during that part of the cycle. As part of the CTE grant program, you constituted a grant committee, and it's a little bit unique in the state in that it is jointly appointed by the head of the state schools and the labor commissioner, so that we had a very good cross-pollinization of folks from industry and the education community that was dealing with CTE and workforce issues. That's been a very productive committee. We've been able to do a lot of extra research out in of the issues that are confronting us for CTE and workforce in the state. The grants, when they're actually done, you'll find out a little bit more about that from Laura Roach here about how many and certain of the issues on them. But the grants did require that we look at geographic diversity across the state. You're going to find out about that. They looked at partnership. That was another key thing. We needed to see industry put some skin in the game so that one of the long-term issues was sustainability, so that these were something that the community wanted and the community would back if we put the monies there. So with that, looking at those numbers, we've made a good start. However, when we look north to the state of Washington, in their biennium, they're spending $384 million on CTE funding. They have a little different structure there on a formula up there for putting it to it. That is really important for us to take and keep in mind when we're looking about jobs in Oregon being a competitive place out there for business. Over the last summer and through the fall, there's been a lot of meetings, various groups, industry groups, community groups. I cannot tell you how much of a wildfire across the state that this issue has generated out there. And within those, we've had a lot of good ideas that have come through and a lot of focusing for that. And one of the key things in the message, what we would say, is connecting education to careers and starting to look at this more of as a continuum of education. Looking at it from all through your K through 12, but definitely starting like in your middle schools and moving on. But it doesn't stop just at the end of high school. It doesn't stop just at community college. It really doesn't even stop at the four-year degree or going through the apprenticeship programs or any of the others. It's a longer-term continuum of the fact that we have a workforce and we're going to have to keep it educated and keep it moving along out there, and that we've had a lot of silos. We've created them over the years. Some of this, we trap ourselves even in our own language of CTE. Well, some people equate that just to old school shop classes. No, absolutely not. It is much broader than that. We're getting into healthcare. You have people in the graphic arts. There's so many different types of skills out there that are needed, and you're seeing some of them hopefully today out in the Galleria where we have 5 schools out there. These different types of skills and differing levels of them, not all of them take a four-year degree. We're going to be talking about STEM, and this is one of the big conversations we've had, too. In the past, we've kind of said, well, STEM is this and CTE is this. What we have, we'll talk about, is a huge amount of overlap on that. And it's going back to silos, labels. Maybe they aren't really what we need to be working around. What we need to be looking at is kids and the type of experiential learning that is out there that can happen, different types of learning that gets the kids hands-on, gets them motivated, keeps them in school, brings them back, makes them want to come finish up, and shows them that there is a potential for them down the line in the future. The graduation rates we have in the state are just not good enough. And one thing we know is that CTE graduation rates are up over 80% of our high school graduates, those who take the good core CTE programs in it. That's important, and we need to get back to it on that. So with that, I think I will turn it over to my friend Eric.
Hi, Eric.
Chair Dembrough, Vice Chair Thatcher, thank you for this opportunity to speak. For the record, my name is Eric Meslow. I live and have a business in Tualatin, Oregon. My company is a high-tech manufacturing company. We manufacture over 90% of our products here in the United States, which makes me somewhat of an anomaly in the high-tech world. But as you'll soon hear, the importance of a strong workforce for me is critical. I'm here to talk about STEM, another acronym thrown at you, science, technology, engineering, and math. I've been working on STEM-related areas for the state of Oregon for about 8 to 10 years. Specifically, I am currently the chair of the Engineering Technology Industry Council, which was created in 1997 by the Senate through Senate Bill 504, I believe. Ultimately, I also sit on the STEM Investment Council, which was created in 2013. I sit on the CTE STEM Employers Coalition, as well as work extensively with the Technology Association of Oregon on these issues. In 1997, if you can put your Wayback hat on, the state was in an economic boom. The high-tech infrastructure in the state was going crazy. The companies, that is the dot-com boom, the companies that were starting up and spinning up within the state could not get enough workers out of our university system. Recognizing this, the legislature created the ETIC, the Engineering Technology Industry Council, to meet those demands by having an industry-directed fund of money that would be injected straight into the university programs that were needed to be either built up in capacity or capability or both. And over the 17 years of ETIC's existence, over $200 million of state taxpayer money has been directly invested into those engineering programs, computer science programs around the seven state universities plus OHSU. The program has been very successful increasing the output of the university system in regards to computer scientists, mechanical, electrical engineers. It has also very, very specifically had in its spirit to bring outside money. So although the state invested $200 million, the matching requirements associated with the statute put in about another $400 million of private money into the system as well. One of the things we recognized very quickly at ETIC is the pipeline effect. We were dealing only with the four-year universities, and we often had difficulty attracting enough students into these degree programs. So about 8 years ago, an organization called the Oregon Pre-Engineering and Applied Science Program was spun up inside of ETIC, and those dollars were actually not spent on the universities. Instead, we siphoned some of our money off to be spent on K through 12 pipeline programs. OPAS, as it's known, made dramatic improvements in the pipeline programs and invested significant amounts of money in Project Lead the Way, organizations like Saturday Academy, the Oregon Lego Robotics FIRST, and eChamp are just a few examples of the investments made over the years. During my tenure as either co-chair or chair, I started to go out and visit many of these K through 12 investments to get eyes on what we were buying, so to speak. And it was at that time that I quickly realized that the CTE world that I had grown up with, the wood shop, the metal shop, and I guess the automotive shop, had dramatically changed in the few places it was still alive and thriving in the state of Oregon. Instead, what you see in those shops, you see those things, but you also see 3D printers, 3D design and graphics, you see CNC machining, you see all the things that you see if you come to my company and go out onto one of my shop floors. You see kids being engaged at a hands-on and in a different manner that is just awesome to see. And that is what CTE to me brings. It brings back excitement and a different way of learning that ultimately fed into STEM jobs. The kids in shop is oftentimes the first place that they learn to solve problems and work with their hands. They're often the ones that move into the engineering fields later on. If they don't move on to the engineering fields, they move on to the trades, or they move on and get a 2 years associate's degree in some sort of discipline that I'll hire as a technician instead of an engineer. As a business owner, I can tell you one of the most difficult positions to hire for me right now. Engineers, yes, they're still really tough. Good ones are really hard to get, and we often have to go out of state. But the hardest person to find is a two-year associate's degree who's a technician who can come in and work on my production floor and work at a high level. Those are really valuable folks. STEM, continuing on, for the longest time, ETIC was it for the most part. ODE, the Oregon Department of Education, had STEM-related activities, but they were dramatically underfunded, so to speak, in regards to their size. In about 2010, you saw industry start to engage at a different level. Intel led in a STEMposium in that year, and shortly after, you saw the creation of the Portland Metropolitan STEM Partnership, a group of industry and educators who get together to solve STEM-related issues. That has caught on and has since moved on to the South Metro STEM Partnership in 2013, and as you'll see here in a second, the state has made investments in taking that hub design and moving it throughout the communities of all parts of the state of Oregon. Right now, I believe there are 5 or 6 STEM hubs that are currently standing up, and there is money in this legislative session to increase that number by double. STEM task force was created in the spirit of the CTE task force that was chaired by Representative Harker, I believe, as he took over from Senator Denbrough as the chair of the Higher Education Committee. The main one of the main recommendations that came out of that task force was the creation of the STEM Investment Council, which is a 9-person industry-led council to make recommendations to the OEIB in regards to how the state should spend and invest in STEM across the state. That organization has been around for 1 year and is meeting regularly and is just getting, I like to say, just getting the wind under their wings and are poised to make strong recommendations into the future. They did make a recommended investment of about $15 million in the governor's budget. Those dollars would go, as previously mentioned, to increase the number of STEM hubs across the state, as well as to have some STEM-styled startup grants for K-12, as well as post-secondary enhancements as well, all very similar to what ETIC does. Overall, I've never been more excited and enthused about STEM and CTE in this state. This battle has been going on for lots of years, and it seems like during that time, we never had all the forces aligned to get any good traction. We may have had the legislature and we may have the governor, but the economy was bad, so money was too tight. We may have had the economy, but maybe we didn't have a leadership that was interested in the topic. This is the first time in a long time that I've seen all the variables that come together to be able to do something dramatic come together, and I'm very excited about the opportunities in this particular session. With that, we're going to talk about STEM and CTE and how they overlap.
Here's the committee. Once again, Brian Krieg. The chart in front of you does a nice job, actually, of laying out the fact is we have a significant amount of overlap between STEM and CTE. It's very hard, actually, to draw any kind of a bright line between the two, because as Eric had noted, for a kid going through school, you get exposed to some of the CTE type of class, but you don't know where you may be going to end up in your life, or what your interest is going to be. Having the exposure and the hands-on learning that you get in the math, you may end up becoming an engineer. You may become a welder. You may become an electrician. There's so many different things in between. We have a lot of shared outcomes, shared approaches, and in the careers, it's interesting. As Eric also mentioned, again, he's a good example of he needs a lot of different types of folks to make his business run, right from people who have business skills, which is part of CTE in our schools, to the people on the floor, or to the folks who go on into the engineering element of it. This discussions that kept coming together between the folks who had pushed for STEM legislation in the state and funding on it and those with us in CTE really brought us together this summer. And what you're seeing is one of the things that has happened now is what started out as the STEM Employer Coalition. We've expanded that to make it a larger situation. It's now the CTE and STEM Employer Coalition because, once again, we have commonalities here that we need to do in lining ourselves and working together. So, and before you, some of the things that we've been talking about for this session, we're looking at, you know, from the CTE side of it, investments that are needed. We need to continue the revitalization grants. But the grants aren't just enough. We need, of that nature, we need to do some more things. We need to be getting regional programs where we tie in with the workforce boards in our regional areas and the employers there to develop more regionalized programs where maybe the kids are coming from a distance to it or some of the learning goes out to them. We need to be looking at summer programs, in particular the middle school kids. There's a gap there where, you know, parents are trying to figure out programming for them in the summer. That is a prime time to reach an audience that still hasn't made up its mind yet about where it's going. By the time we get into high school, sometimes the kids have tuned out already. We've kind of lost them. Getting them while they're still open-minded and interested in things, putting them into some programs in the summer where they get their hands on science and math in an applied way can really get them interested and involved in it. And so that's going to be an important thing. And then looking at sustainable funding, then trying to figure out how do we get to a situation where the teachers at our schools have the long-term funding behind them. There's a lot of talk about the need for industry to step up. I would say industry has been stepping up. The problem for industry stepping up is we get fatigued because things come and go. Budgets come and go. A school will start to ramp up in a direction. Economy goes bad. They back down off of it. Okay, the program kind of goes away. The other thing is some industries can, companies or even individuals can do this for a while, but they can't do it constantly. And we have, for every one that does it, we have 20 others in their competitors and everything who aren't. And kind of looking at this needs to come from a more central way via the state to help with this model. Industries will continue to step up, and they will need to be an important part of it, and pushing for the schools to have partnerships, I think, is still, no matter how we work these programs out, incredibly important. Gary?
Ditto. I really don't have anything to add to that. I think, again, I just fear that this opportunity passes us by without making real and long-lasting change.
And if I could close with one last thought on this, and it goes back to my word continuum. As we've discussed this with so many folks involved in this, we need to look at, it does start with the kids in school as they're going through it and all through into their working career. And the thing is we do funding for the kids at the K through 12 level relatively evenly for them, but then some kids will go on to community college or onto a four-year program where the state continues to help and support them. One of the knocks that has come against CTE type of education is that it costs more, and so it's the first thing to get cut when times go bad. I argue that it's not more costly. It's just the cost is maybe at a different point in a continuum, because the kid that does not graduate because they don't stay in school, because they're not motivated, they're not interested, and they don't see a future for themselves because they don't want to go to college, where's the cost factor? How are we factoring it in when they are unemployable? We have social services costs, we have healthcare costs, incarceration costs, so many others down the line that are just red dollars, what I would call negatives. We're just flushing down the toilet. Where if we can front load a little bit more, yes, they're a little bit more expensive at that front, but it's a false economy to say they're more expensive because of the long-term impact.
I'll go so far to say that all numbers show that STEM-related and CTE-related jobs pay back to the state in the form of income taxes and other ways dramatically for the investment the state would make. Yes, they may be twice as expensive to produce, but they'll produce about eight times the type of revenue for taxes as the average student will. So these are good-paying jobs, good careers, and an excellent way to invest in our state's future.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you. And I will add that according to one of my own local districts, Portland Public Schools, their students who are in CTE programs graduate at a 92% rate. Mm-hmm. So it is very impressive. Laura, should we turn to you?
Would you let me sit right there? Do you mind?
I would.
Thank you.
Laura, the Countess of CTE, is that what call you? Or the Queen of the Revitalization Grant?
Well, I'm a queen in the back there, too. Good afternoon, Senator Dimbrough, Chair, and Vice Chair Thacker and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Laura Roach, and I'm the director in the Department of Education of Secondary Post-Secondary Transitions. And this is where career and technical education is seated within the department. So I wanted to share with you today, let me see if I can get this up. I might
hit the escape key there.
All right, let me see if I can, whoops. We might have to have. I wanted to share with you today kind of a recap of some of the work that has been done based on the significant contributions that the legislature has made, and to say thank you to all of you who have supported career and technical education through the years. In the last 4 or 5 years, I've worked with Senator Dembro and Senator Rosenbaum and a lot of Gelser. I think we have seen you around, and a lot of workforce people who have really come to bat to say we believe this is really, really important, and it's a program that we need to continue to invest in. You might be interested, it's not only CTE Day in Oregon, but it is CT Month in the nation. And so across the nation, students and teachers are, again, promoting career and technical education as a vital part of the education system and garnering workforce partners across the nation to make sure that this program stays viable throughout the coming years. Let me see if this is going to work. Okay. So as I indicated earlier, connecting education to careers has been a conversation that's been had all summer, both by the STEM folks and the CTE folks. And they have been focusing on sustainable funding, access, student success, and economic vitality and prosperity. So all the messages and the conversations we have had have been focused around this. And I think it has given us a good opportunity to think about how we have one voice together. I will share with you that part of this initiative, or most of this initiative, came from our workforce partners who, from the external part, recognized that CTE programs were declining and that they were being eliminated due to budget crisis or teacher issues or whatever. And so when we went back through our records, we found that since 1996, we had lost almost 600 high school programs in career and technical education. We still remain with 600 programs. And when I'm talking about programs from the world that I'm working in right now, we're talking about approved programs, programs that are organized in a cohesive fashion, programs that have connections to post-secondary. They're based on academic content and technical content. They have technical skill assessments, and they have student support services. There is a lot of CTE out there that is a set of electives or a program that may not be approved. However, we don't have, to be honest, a real good handle on how much of that is out there. And the reason this is set up the way it is by these career areas is because we were living with federal funding only. And so that was the driving factor for how our programs are established and the requirements we have for those programs. I think I went the wrong way. It's interesting that at the high school and middle school level, we have 308,000 students, and yet we look and see how many students we're serving either as a participant, which is like a half a credit, or concentrators who move into one credit or more. So the point of this slide is we have a large student base that we're unable to reach right now and to help prepare for the workforce because of our funding structure. The federal program that we had, we get between $13 and $15 million from the federal government. We split that 50-50 with community colleges. So that really means that given whether the federal funding was up or down, we were living and making these 600 programs or 1,200 programs being able to disperse between $6 and $7 million to them. So that's really not very much money across the state. Along came the legislature and our workforce partners and said, let us help. And so the CTE Revitalization Grant Program was established. It has been a competitive grant process for either new or existing programs. It is strongly designed around partnerships and with a high commitment to geographic distribution across the state. Of the original approximately $2 million that we received, we had 43 applications and we were only able to award 8 grants. And there was almost $10 million requested at that point, 8.9. If you look at the lower part of the chart, you can see that a lot of this money went to upgrades. Schools no longer had their labs, they no longer had the electrical equipment, they no longer had current equipment, And the other part of that went to salaries and stipends and substitutes for teachers to help get these programs up and running. So the money has been well spent, and very little, if you look in this particular slide, only 3% went to administration to make things happen. In 13-15, we again, you were awarded us additional money to work with, and you can see the summary there that we had 62 applications, 32 grants awarded. And again, the money went to upgrades, physical improvements in equipment, to professional development, and salaries was a little less. So we have been monitoring what programs felt they needed to grow and improve. We can also show you that.
So in that previous chart, we see STEM embedded grants and CTSO embedded. Could you explain what CTSO is?
Sure. Career and Technical Student Organizations. If you look in the back of the room, you see a lot of red coats back there. And they represent FBLA, Marketing Group, FFA, which used to be Future Farmers of America. And so the representatives were very committed to making sure that those student organizations be included in the CTE revitalization program. And we look at those student organizations as a way to give students leadership opportunities, but really also to do the applied learning out in their communities and in both state and national events as well. If we look at where the grants went, the committee was very wise and very helpful in guiding us over the past two cycles. We gave a third of the grants officially to metropolitan areas. We gave a third of the grants to rural areas. And then the other third, we looked at the highest scoring grants and made the best decisions we could to award those grants and help with the distribution. We also know from our data that in general, CTE programs in terms of serving underserved students, our students of minority pretty much follow, their participation pretty much follows the state demographics. And so the next iteration of CTE revitalization grants, we also want to focus very strongly on underserved students, even more than we have in the past. As the group indicated, they've been looking for funding and advocating for funding, working hard since the last session. This is what exists in ODE's budget as proposed at this time. There was a request to do a facility survey of facilities that might be available so that we could access those and not have to rebuild as many high school shops and our high school labs or whatever. So there was a request for a facility survey. The youth engagement was $7,500,000, along with the regional collaboratives and the original CTE revitalization grants as we've had them before. And the committee felt that the revitalization grants, because we'd only been able to do a limited number, need to have another opportunity to expand the opportunity to renew. But as Brian suggested, we also wanted to give focus to those programs that were in a position to deliver regional services. And so we could access and leverage all the equipment and opportunities and training and teachers that we could collectively do. And then the vision around the summer bridge programs was bringing those summer programs to that regional design and making sure that middle school students had an opportunity, a short-term summer opportunity to experience some CTE learning, and then at 10th, 11th, and 12th grade to have a real intense kind of experience and perhaps start working really toward an industry credential. So there's a building piece here, that there is a design piece around how do we move from the grants to something that's more regionalized and can offer students from across the state. For example, if a Fossil student wanted to go to Treasure Valley to community college or wherever in the summer, we could provide that opportunity through some of this funding, and they could really work with the equipment there at the college or at another school, whatever that turned out to be. The other part in our proposed budget is money for the student leadership organizations. And then I'm sure some of you have heard the weighted funding, sustainable funding discussion that's separate. So that's what has been proposed in ODE's budget. And, of course, we understand things come and go and change. And The numbers are here today and gone tomorrow, but nevertheless, that's what lives in ODE's proposed budget at this time for CTE. And you can see your role in helping to fund CTE over the last few years, and particularly the green, where you, as the legislature, have stepped forward and provided us with funding. And that compares to our Perkins Federal Fund and General Fund match. It has made a tremendous difference for the schools that have received those grants. It is unbelievable to see how excited the students are. I think you've had a chance to see just a group of them out in the lobby, and how excited they are and what they're learning. And we have been, my team has been making visits across the state to make sure that things are going well, to see what support they might need. And the excitement and enthusiasm is just amazing. And I would invite any of you who haven't had a chance to let us know. We'd love to have you go with us. The programs range from graphic design to healthcare to construction to, you've seen the 3D manufacturing. All of just almost in agriculture, there's been lots of opportunities out there for them to increase their resources and engage more students. I wanted to address the Washington funding formula thing because I think it's important. A lot of people have asked about this. Washington State at the secondary level invests $384 million in CTE. And it goes back to something Senator Dimbrough had proposed before. Across that state, there are 10 skill centers, there are 15 satellite centers, there are comprehensive high schools, and then there are multiple grant programs. The actual investment in the individual student, I mean, the whole structure is entirely different, but the actual investment in the individual student isn't so different. But the fact that you have a large scale investment and that it serves such a large group of students across the state magnifies that investment. And then how does the state benefit from that? As Eric suggested, they propose an 8-to-1 return on the investment for secondary and a 2-to-1 return investment in post-secondary. And so I think understanding that that's really a system of career and technical education in STEM, and that they have built that system and maintained that system over 20 years or 30 years or however long. Well, if you gave me $384 million today, I'm not sure what I would do. I think I would pass out. But and I wouldn't know if I would know how to handle it. But I think the point behind this is, but if you decide to do that, I won't turn it down, just for the record. The point being that they have sustained that system, and they have not let it fall when budget crisis came along, and they have not lost their teacher core. So the work that we're doing now for me and for the others that are involved in this process, I think, are really trying to rebuild, maintain the structure we have, and rebuild it as we can afford to do it. And so the contributions that you make are really very important in that growth model. So I often have people come to me and say, well, why don't you do what Washington does? And why doesn't Oregon do this? And, you know, you kind of go, oh, well. But I think that the real point is that the commitment to sustaining career and technical education and STEM and those programs, and then making sure the resources keep them alive and well so more students have an opportunity and not just a limited few. So I thank you for the opportunity and your support. It is exciting times for us, and just welcome any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Laura, for all your work over the years. Colleagues, any quick questions of the panel? Okay, then I think we're ready to hear from some students. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have some students from Columbia Basin Home Builders Program. We have Adrian Harden from Centennial High School. Come on up.
Hello, members of the committee. We represent Columbia Basin Student Homes. I'm Elizabeth Herrera.
My name is Nathan Hurdy.
Why don't we hear from you two first, and then we'll move over to her. Great. Tell us about the Home Builders Program.
All right, so basically what the Columbia Basin Student Home Builders Program is basically it takes students out of from high schools and gives them the opportunity to work alongside with contractors on a day-to-day basis, and we're actually literally building a house. And what this allows students to do is they actually get a real-world sense of what it would be like on a day-to-day basis to work, you know, as a contractor or work for a contractor. You know, we're out there last two periods of every day, rain or shine, and so that gives you a really good taste of what the job would feel like if you were to choose that as a career.
We work with, I word it, different teachers every single month because we get new contractors for new things that the house needs. For example, who teaches us to do electricity is completely different from who teaches us to do plumbing. So I, from the beginning of the year, I saw it as a class, but now I'm starting to see it as a real life workplace. Like I can, as soon as I get there, my hat's on, my gloves are on, and my glasses are on. It's uniform and it's a step over just a classroom class. Like I took 2 years of construction classes and they can't even touch this program. This program is way beyond just making sawhorses in the classroom. This is real life. We work with more tools that you would actually see at a construction work site. And the house we're building has surround sound stereos. There's a hot tub out of the master bedroom. There is LED lighting that's going into it, so the electricity bill will be way down. It is a very, very nice house. And even though that sounds very expensive, when we sell it, the money will come back to us, and that will go into next year. So even though it might seem at first that it costs a lot of money, we're making that money back every single day that we show up. And there's 12 of us. So about 4 of us every single day will go to one contractor because usually we had electricity and plumbing at the same time. So for 2 days, I was working with electricity and maybe Nathan's group was working with plumbing, and then we'd switch. And so we're getting a little bit of everything. And if Nathan prefers plumbing over electricity, then he can just stay with the plumbing while I just stay with the electricity. And you get to choose what you want to work with so that you can specialize on it. Well, at the same time, you're specializing in everything. So I believe this program is beyond construction. It's tools of the trade. It's amazing, and it's even though the weather sometimes gets really, really bad, there was a day where our nail guns were freezing, so we had to hammer nails in, and that hurts way more than I can even describe to you. There are days where it's scorching hot, and we have to wear long pants no matter what, and we're just close to death because of the sun, but it's all worth it. It really is. Just looking at it every single day is the reason why I show up every single day.
Great. And so even though it was cold and even though it was hot, you still chose to go to school that day.
Yeah.
I personally believe that it's very important. You know, the fact that it was cold or hot, I think, has some value to it because it shows you as a student, you know, what it truly would be like to work in this trade. You can't take a day off if it's raining or if it's a little too cold when you're a contractor. So it really gives you a taste of what it would be like working in this field, and I think that's very important.
And is there anything, before I turn it over to my colleagues, is there anything that you learn on, you know, at the job site that kind of spills over to your other studies? Are there any connections that you're making there?
Math-wise, the contractors encourage us to think in our heads. And they also will just stop what they're doing completely, and they'll look at us, and they'll be like, okay, what would you do in this situation? And they turn it over onto us. And it humbles you to realize that once you get into the real world, there's a bigger man standing above you, and you got to respect that. It teaches you respect that you might not understand in school because you look at a teacher and you're just like, that's not going to be my boss. I don't have to respect him, but these are your bosses. Well, I don't think that like that, but.
That's good. I'm a teacher in my other life, so be careful.
Yeah, I think that some of the main things that this project has taught me, the first one would be problem-solving skills. Every day we're faced with challenges and issues, you know, that just would come up in the real world. And so we're constantly having to kind of think outside the box, you know, here's a problem, how can I get around it, how can I get over it, and, you know, get the best outcome possible. And I think that this real world application and hands-on really has developed an ability to problem solve in my life. I also think responsibility, you know, we are building a house that someone else will buy, so you better do it right. I think that that is something that's very, very important that this project has taught me personally. You know, if you don't do something right, you got to go back and redo it. You can't just let it slide. So I think those are the two main things that this program has taught me.
We have inspectors, too, so we get told if we're doing something wrong, and the contractors will tell us what the inspectors are looking for, and even when we talk to the contractors, they tell us what they're looking for and how what they would do and what we should do for them to hire us. So there's learning what the workforce is looking for.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for our home builders? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is really great to hear your story, having myself been involved in this from the very beginning with Senator Dembro on the task force, and just talking about how great the need is and what the potential was, then hearing your story about how you're experiencing this in the real world is really heartening. I wanted to ask you if your own personal career goals have changed at all as a result of this experience.
Well, yes, it actually has, because I really have started to enjoy what I'm doing, because it gives me a sense of pride to realize that someone is going to be using what I have just put down. And my friend, who was considering nursing, is now also considering interior design, which is another aspect of building a house, is what will the house look like beyond the framework. So there's those little things, because building a house, there's so many jobs that are connected to that and so many experience that we're getting that we could just... We have so many options now.
Well, for me, prior to this, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do in any kind of field. Going through this program, though, definitely makes me think something in construction I think I would certainly enjoy. I've always enjoyed working with my hands and building things, but I think the real-world application has showed me that construction is something I'm good at and I would really thoroughly enjoy. So, yes, I believe that it has definitely influenced my thinking in terms of what I'd like to do in the future.
Great. Well, good luck.
Yeah, you might think about becoming lobbyists. You're very good at presenting to us. Yes, Senator Knoop.
Thank you, Chair Dembro. I really want to ask if they have paid sick leave, but I was going to ask. I thought, because we could hook them up. But what I really want to ask is, how many hours a week do you get to spend building the house, and how many years do you guys get to participate in the program?
It's two class periods every single day, so that's about like 2 hours. So about 10 hours a week. We also do have the options to come in during the weekends, because we have deadlines to meet. And when we hire contractors to come in, they have a schedule, and we have to go with their schedule. So if we don't have something done that they need done, we come in during the weekend and make sure it's done. So it's about 10 hours, maybe some added to it. And
yeah, typically on the weekend, you'll put between 5 or 6 hours on, you know, a Saturday or something, give or take an hour or two, typically is about normal. And that's just simply to, you know, if we get a little bit behind or something, we need to make something up. It's an optional. You don't have to come in on the weekend, but it's greatly encouraged, and I always enjoy that.
Well, all I can say is these two are mature way beyond their years. And I think they have great success ahead of them. So,
absolutely.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure, I do have one question.
Yes, please. Vice Chair.
How did you get chosen? I mean, it sounds like there are 12 people in the program, and you just kind of like struck the lottery or something? Or you know, are there a bunch of other people just admiring and wishing they could be on the list and be involved? Or how does this go?
There are certain classes that they require you to have, like geometry, just because we're working fast, and we have to be like, okay, minus half an inch off of that, and then nail it down. And there's also, they want you to have the basic, like, Construction 1 class, just so you know, just basically the basics. And the because just walking out there, though, construction class, like I said, can't really even touch it because it's a whole new experience. But just having the basics and knowing your math is about all.
Yeah, they definitely wanted us to have some, I guess, prior practice. For example, in geometry, we're working a lot with shapes, you know, and, you know, if you need to cut out a triangular piece of trim, you want to be able to do the math and do it right the first time rather than having to do it 25 times and guessing each time, adding, you know, a little bit. So that's definitely very important to have a knowledge of mathematics and how exactly, you know, simple geometry and so forth. And also, we were just, I know I go to Stanfield, which it's kind of a partnership between the two schools. And so they approached my shop teacher and asked for candidates. And so part of it was just simply, you know, who they thought personality-wise would be the best choice for a program like this. So that's another factor that came into who was selected for the program.
That's another thing is it's not just Hermiston kids. So we have competition. We have Stanfield as our competition and UMatilda as our competition to get in because this is a regional program. So they're looking at people from Stanfield and UMatilda. And usually they're going to really more want juniors and seniors just because they want not just experience but a maturity that seems to be more seen in older people.
And in terms of your question as to how long you can typically stay in the program, obviously if you're a senior, you know, 1 year and you graduate. Juniors, however, have the option, if it will work with their schedule and they have the credits to still graduate, that after their junior year, their senior year, they can come back. And I guess the main goal of that is kind of to be almost like a foreman for those younger students or new students who have never been involved in the program before, to have a few more people who really know what they're doing and kind of can take charge and just make it make the load lighter on the you know, like Mr. Berger, our teacher, or the contractors. I believe, you know, that just give a little bit more hands-on experience to those who want to try it again.
Well, thank you, both of you. Why don't you stay there? We'll hear from Adrian, and maybe something else will come up that we might want to hear from you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Adrian Hardin. I've been a CTE business teacher and the Future Business Leaders of America advisor at Centennial High School in Gresham for 15 years. For the past 12, I've been given the opportunity to serve on the Oregon FBLA Board of Advisors, and I'm currently the board chair. I'm going to speak a little bit today about incorporating CTSOs into the curriculum. At Centennial, we've developed a successful CTE business management program that incorporates the CTSO co-curricular approach. As a result of this model, ours is considered one of the most successful programs in the state. And during my tenure, Centennial has been able to have roughly 600 students attend the state conference and about 160 qualify for the national competition. As an educator, we're often asked to reflect on our progress and our processes, and getting Centennial to this point has been difficult, time-consuming, and frustrating, and yet the most rewarding part of my career. The second or third day when I started teaching, my principal came in to check on me, and he let me know that I was the new FBLA advisor. I had a little exposure to the program during my student teaching, so I knew the very basics of the association. Eventually, our chapter started attending conferences where my students learned valuable business and leadership skills, and I was able to network with educators and industry professionals. I became more involved, and I developed more engaging curriculum with more structure, and it made me a better teacher. Students began seeing the results of their hard work, and they were placing at the state conference, and during this time is when I saw the co-curricular model of FBLA, and I decided I wanted that to be a part of our CTE program. It was an uphill battle, I'll be honest. I proposed a course 3 times before my administration team even looked at it. And then finally, in 2006, Centennial offered our business leadership class for the first time. Since then, the curriculum of the association has really served as the cornerstone of my educational approach. The incentive-based program builds confidence in students, builds business acumen, encourages civic involvement, and truly drives the students to success. Since then, Centennial has had 68 students placed in the top 10 at the national conference, 8 of which have been national champions. Also, in my experience, my kids have higher GPAs, are more involved in the community, and because of FBLA, are able to develop a more comprehensive resume, and they're the ones that are winning those scholarship dollars. They're graduating college and career ready. The CTE revitalization grant is definitely a step in the right direction. Centennial High School was a recipient of one of those grants. We've been able to double our offerings in manufacturing and bring back our entrepreneurship and business program. A key component of that implementation has been the partnership with Impact Northwest. They've fostered the education private sector relationship and have been the catalyst in getting our students career ready. The grants brought a freshness to CTE, relief, a feeling of support, and obviously it's been great for kids. Now in the second year, incorporating CTSOs needs to be a key strategy. Our professional development's up 147%. 17 new CTSOs have been started this year, and we're able to reach more students with better programming. The program at Centennial is just one of the 250 CTSOs in the state that represent approximately 10,000 students. The other 178,000 high school students aren't having that same experience. 5% of high school students are involved in CTSOs. That statistic is alarming, as these programs clearly show the increase of depth and learning of our young adults. As we grow CTE in Oregon, it's essential that CTSOs are a part of that growth, allowing for students to meet with real-life industry judges for local, state, national competition tells a real story of college and career readiness. CTOs aren't just an extracurricular activity where you get some cookies and some donuts. They are real CTE and education measurables. I can safely say that all of us here can agree that CTE and CTSOs benefit our young adults. However, current funding is only about a fifth of where it ideally needs to be. And to put the current funding level, the current funding level really allows for no expansion. The funding, as it goes to work currently, will mean there's immediately less available. A base of about $5,000 is necessary to operate a quality CTSO. In the first year of grants, we were fortunate. We received $1,600. And this year, because there was more people funded, we received $1,100. To fully fund every CTE, it would cost an estimated $5 billion per biennium. Without this funding of some sort, there's a huge gap that forces local CTSOs to raise on average about $10,000 to $50,000 to help get kids college and career ready. Now, that can be extremely daunting for any new teacher or new advisor, and to be quite frank, from my personal experience, it's exhausting. I still have to raise $2,000 per student to participate in my program every year, and I lose kids. Kids have to make the decision to leave because their families simply cannot afford the cost associated with participation at the level that they want to compete. I'm not saying funding should be an entitlement or come without accountability. I think everyone that benefits from CTSO should contribute. Parents, kids, students, industry. What I'm sharing is that if we want quality CTSO programs to reach the other 95% of Oregon students, we need to spend more time on programming and less time on fundraising. Bottom line, like these kids, they have the desire to learn, and CTSOs are their driving force. What I've seen as a teacher, and I'm sure you've seen too, is the latest and greatest in education. We've got SIM, CAM, No Child Left Behind, the bullies, the nutrition, the list goes on, to the most recent, STEM and Common Core. All of these are important issues to solve, but CTSO is a dynamic platform for solving these educational goals. So in closing, I really just am saying, fund us, support us, challenge us, FBLA, DECA, HOSA, SkillsUSA, FFA, FCCLA, and HOSA. It's what's great here in Oregon. And if you invest in us, you're going to see a change in workforce readiness. And I thank you for your time and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Adrienne, for those stirring remarks. It's easy to see why your students are doing so well at national competitions. Any questions about her program or about CTSOs in general? I think that adding CTSOs to the focus of the revitalization grants was really, really important. And, you know, it's true. If we're trying to really create stability, then we've seen it in so many areas related to education. What happens in the classroom is vital, but what happens outside the classroom is equally vital. We see it with the Home Builders Program. You know, we see it with yours. It really is inspiring. Okay, so thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Of course, these programs are not without their problems, and so for that, we'll call up Terrell Smith and Jeff Reardon, Representative Reardon, to tell us for some strategies of how some of these problems need to be addressed. Okay, our shop teachers are here.
Well, maybe the term shop is coming back. I've heard it more today than I have in a long time. My name is Terrell Smith. I teach computer science at Sherwood High School, and I have for, it pains me to say I've been in the business so long. For 36 years, I started teaching computer science in 83 and started teaching in Sherwood in 79. I really do feel called to be a teacher. And what I want to do is create a curriculum and an environment like you just saw. Those kids want to get up in the morning and go to school. Not all students do. Our dropout rate indicates that not all students want to get up in the morning and go to school. And so how are we going to be able to create an environment that creates learning relevant, create a learning opportunity that gets them up in the morning and gets them excited about going to school? And CTE does that. And I've been fortunate to be involved with computer science and CTE for my teaching career. Maybe that's why I'm able to hang around so long, is that kids do want to come to my classroom. But I believe it's our social justice calling for us adults to provide as many opportunities as we possibly can for those emerging humans that we are in charge of. And I think the school system can create a work-ready and a college-ready diploma. It's an and. That and is the operative word there. Many schools throughout Oregon is an or it's just college-ready, and that concerns me. Some statistics that I give my kids, there are 3 qualified applicants for every job in the general market. That's why we have unemployment. But in a high-tech industry, there are 3 jobs for every qualified applicant. And so it's easy to bring relevancy to my curriculum, to high-tech education, for what I teach. But some specifics about Oregon CTE programs, and I am also a leader in Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association, and we did a study a year ago regarding the 12-13 school year on the programs that were in Oregon. Of the 341 diploma-granting high schools, 127 of them do not even have a computer class, not even office. 287 do not offer a high-tech course, a coding course of any kind. Now, I'm using computer science as kind of a micro set of the engineering or other CTE departments that are available. But we went out and got these statistics. We actually had to do some cold calling. ODE provided a lot of the statistics for us. So back to 287 high schools do not provide high-tech courses, and 47 provide at least one high-tech course. But courses. I teach 150. I have 150 students a day, but there aren't very many programs in Oregon that provide that kind of a rich computer science education. And at Sherwood High School, we have other CTE programs as well. I would say and invite you to come to Sherwood High School and visit us. And you're certainly welcome to. But you can just walk down the hallway and see our kids with their 3D makerspace, and they're pretty they're happy to tell their story. So you can tell them that I sent you. But so anyway, there's very few. We have a problem. There aren't enough programs in Oregon. The situation is, though, I see a challenge looming. If Senator Reardon and others with this STEM and CTE pressure are successful, the problem we have is staffing. Where are we going to get the teachers? And the opportunities to find teachers for these programs, well, they could come from industry, but it's hard for me to encourage a computer science teacher making $90,000 to come and start at a teaching salary at $40,000. The only reason that individual might come is because they've done that, and now it's time to change the world through students, which I do, and I'm fortunate to be able to do that. But that's going to be a difficult sell, but there will be some that come, and that is important, and we have avenues for that. We also want to, but the biggest volume of teachers that we can find for these programs are in-service teachers. Teachers are in the buildings already. Tap on the shoulders of the math and science teachers and say, hey, how about if we train you up in various areas? Because those teachers already know how to teach. We don't have to teach them the art of teaching. So we add some skills. So that is one avenue. Another avenue is to get involved in the Bill 2624 talks about getting it, tapping on the shoulders of those math and science teachers that are not yet employed but are working through their degree program, and they would pick up some more CTE coursework and build their skill there, so they'd be ready to take over for some of us who are, we're not going to last forever. That need to be replaced, and new programs will come into being. But as indicated before, we need infrastructure as well. I'm not going to talk about that today, but that is a big issue. But I want to go back to and just close with the idea that we can do a college-ready and a work-ready diploma. If you look around your school districts and your high schools, are they able to do that? And I think we will be able to if we were really to increase the general funding and rising tide floats all boats, that would help. But in the absence of that at this point in time, can we do it? Look at model programs. And I think Representative Reardon will talk about the issue regarding Senate Bill 2623 and 2624. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Terrell. Representative Reardon, welcome.
Thank you. I am Representative Reardon for the record, and delighted to be here today. Thank you, Chair Dembro, for inviting me over, panel. It's great to be here. You've seen the results of a lot of our work today. You've heard people talking about CTE, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that and try to sell you that CTE is a good idea. If you don't know it now, you've been dozing off, and I've watched. You haven't been. You've been paying rapt attention. But with all new and wonderful developments, we do tend to create problems. And as Terrell just mentioned, one of those is the potential for staffing. And it's not just potential for, you know, who's going to teach these career classes. And I became sadly aware of this my last year teaching at David Douglas. And I was happily teaching a woodworking class, and yet then I was assigned to a metals class. It was not a good year for me. It really was a sad thing to do to an old teacher ready to retire. And it certainly wasn't the best for the kids. This is 4 years later. They still don't have what I would call a qualified teacher for that metals program after 4 years. Centennial, that you just heard from, had a similar issue. They were able to attract somebody from industry, and the gentleman came from Boeing. I went down to witness the program, and And so that seems to be working out very well for them. So this bill, 2624, what I'm trying to do is just try to make it a little bit easier for those that are in industry to transition. They have a lifetime of skills. They have those business contacts. They know what it takes to be successful, not just in the skills, but from those human interactions that are so necessary to a successful career. They have all of that, but what they may not have is that little skill called teaching. And it's a lot different to step into a classroom and try to organize, you know, 25 or 30 eager learners. That's a little different than maybe organizing the wrenches on the shop floor. So a lot of skill involved. We've got to, so what I want to do is have a better education program for them. And let me back up just a little bit. Somebody can be hired right from industry today. If a high school principal says, you know, we need you to teach this class, they can do that. And then the person has 3 years to get their license in place. What I'd like to do is make sure that they can get that proper preparation up front and get it quickly. And so I've used the term boot camp for this, or probably better terms, but we need to restart the education programs for the old shop teachers, even though, you know, shop is way more than that. So there is a little bit of money in this bill. We need to entice about 4 schools to start a program to educate folks. And why I say 4 is we'd like to have that around the state so somebody could not have to travel too far. But we have not prepared teachers of career classes for over 20 years. I don't know the exact number of years, but over 20 years since we've taught any what we used to call vocational classes. I know because I was taking one in the 70s. I went back in 1999 and tried to restart it. And they, it took them about several weeks just to find the dusty file to find my program. So they don't do it anymore, and they haven't for years. So I think get some good programs in place, make sure it's relative, it's fast, and we get these people off to a good start. And this would not, by the way, this would not would also serve those who might be. An excellent teacher now, if they want to come and maybe retrain a little bit and try to learn how to teach a shop class or a career class, then they could also have that available to them as well. So I think it's it serves them very well. The other small part is how TSPC would have some information on their website about, you know, where the jobs are, how to get jump through the hoops. So, and that's all.
Well, thank you very much, Rep. Reardon, for all the work you've done on this issue, and for mentioning that House bill to us, which is going to work on the teacher shortage. Most likely, that'll be heard in the House, and we'll go to Ways and Means, so we probably won't have it before us as a committee. So it's good for us to hear about that now. You have another bill, as I understand it, that is looking into perhaps giving high school credit for work that's done in a CTE class. Can you tell us something about that?
Yes, and thank you for asking. That is 2623. And the challenge, and this was actually brought up in a Work Systems, Inc. work group that I participated in over the last year or so. And The challenge is that the student schedule is really tight. It's very crowded. So we have a lot of the core classes. Sometimes there's remedial classes that have to be taken. They only have so many time slots over the 4-year period course to get their work done. So what this bill would do would allow the kids to get credit for a core class in a CTE program. And you heard the students talking just a moment ago about all the math and the geometry that they use in their work, in their building a home. And that's exactly what happens, whether it be in construction class or metals, in electronics, they're using math all the time. I just want them to be able to get credit for that and be able to take those classes that light up their eyes. And that's
So if I could add something to it from the trenches, if I teach a computer science class, they can't get math credit for it, but it's math rich. I say they can't. There are mechanisms in place to make that happen, and what the bill does is create pilots. So there is support and efforts so to create models so that I could look at that model school and say, great, they're doing that. I'm going to model my curriculum after it, and my administrator says, cool, it's done, and I'm able to offer then maybe a math credit for a computer science course. Also, the new generation science standards, which has a significant engineering component. Those, you know, there may be something in ag, for example, and I know this does happen, but where those can be equivalency credits, it opens up, actually it gives the administrator power to add these programs and a reason to and some rationale. So that's but it's a model. It creates models. It's and it will be able to be replicated in the future.
And I'm glad you reminded me of that, Chair Demereau. This is proposed to be a pilot program.
Right.
The industry group had hoped for a mandate, and I suggested that wasn't necessarily a popular idea. But would be a pilot, and state of Washington already does this, and so we're going to hopefully borrow as many of their ideas as we can. So,
great. Thank you. Thank you both. Yep. Any questions for our two gentlemen? Okay. Thank you very much for the input. Okay, so there's one final big problem that needs to be solved, and the person who's going to help us solve it is John Rakowitz. John, come up and show us the money.
I'm feeling a little lonely up here. For the record, John Rakowitz with AGC, Associated General Contractors. We're the largest commercial construction association in the state of Oregon, broad cross-section of members throughout the state, all sizes, types of contractors. I'm not sure that I am up to the challenge that the chair just issued. I want to talk about the stakes, I guess.
Yeah. And let me just say before you start, yes. John has been a real hero in this issue for a number of years, really helped us to get the revitalization program going.
Well, and I appreciate that very much, Chair Demereau. Actually, there's a bunch of heroes sitting in the back of the room here. And I guess this all falls into, in my view, which is a good thing, enlightened self-interest. And I'll get into that, what I mean by that. We as an industry are acutely aware that permanent and significant investments in career tech ed will decide the future of our industry. It's that simple. And that's why we were early supporters and remain absolutely committed to this issue for the last 5 years, along with a lot of industry partners, starting in 2010 and leading to the 2011 grants, the first revitalization grants that the Oregon Legislature passed. And I want to point out every single action on the part of the legislature related to these issues, including a number of bills and the funding, has been done unanimously in this building in a whole variety of different environments, and that's really critical. I do not believe this is a partisan issue. I believe this is an issue that will serve kids, communities, and industry, and I don't know of any other that can make that claim. So that's the claim I'm making today. I actually believe, and I'm just going to put it out there, this could be the turning point. Earlier testimony pointed to what the state of Washington is doing. Let me just profile one industry, and there are many, what we face and what it could mean to kids, communities, if we make a significant investment. And I can speak to what my thoughts are on what that means if the committee so desires. Today, we employ about 80,000 workers in the state of Oregon, the construction industry as a whole. It's a little under 5% of the workforce. We face the same demographic challenges that every other high-demand, high-paid industry faces, and that doesn't matter if you're talking healthcare, high-tech, manufacturing, us, a whole variety of industries. And in our industry, 20% of our current workforce is 55 years of age and older. They're baby boomers, and they're headed toward the exit. And if you combine that with any modest growth whatsoever, the Employment Department of the State of Oregon tells us, they're predicting that by 2020, we're going to need 25,000 more workers. That's what I mean by enlightened self-interest. And we're just one industry. So you take that and multiply that out. You've got a very interesting situation. And I believe it's a big-time opportunity and or, depending on what happens, a big-time opportunity lost. And that's the challenge I want to put out there today. I want to point out, too, that the average wage of a construction worker today is just under $52,000 a year with benefits that are of the first order. And that's 16% more than the rest of the private sector workers out there in our state today. And that was those are statistics drawn from last year's Employment Department statistics. The point for me, and I'm going to do something I don't normally do, is where are we going to recruit these workers? And our opinion, we are the AGC Oregon Columbia chapter, so I'm stepping a little bit on my own toes. We represent the entire industry in the state of Oregon and five chapters in Southwest Washington. But bottom line, will Oregon students be prepared and ready to take these jobs that pay very, very well? Like the two kids, I'm going to get their numbers, and we're going to go after them before this day is over, that just testified from the home builders. So for us, that's how stark this is. This is not there's no nuance here. I want to point out that this is a state issue, statewide. Oregon Business Council, Oregon Business Association, PG, a whole host of players are here in the room today. They did something very interesting late last summer, in the fall. They went to, I think, 10, 11, 12 different forums. They convened them along with Business Oregon, and they went out to the communities and asked them what they most needed on the economic front. And the issue that surfaced across every community in the state of Oregon that they visited is workforce development. And right underneath that, how do you get there? Career tech education. So this is something that in your communities, in your districts, everywhere in this state, they are begging for. And so I believe we have an opportunity that is unique. And I'm not one usually to get into that. Usually I get into the technicals of the bill. I will add, I'm talking mostly about the money, but I have been saying, and sometimes it's getting quoted back to me, there are three pillars here. We have to have the resources. And I'm just going to get out there and say, we've had a grant program. I view it as startup, kickstart, jumpstart money. You have to have something to sustain that over time so that you can grow these programs to the quality that you saw before you today. You also have to have the teachers, and you're not going to get them from one source. And that's why we are very, very supportive of the one bill that was discussed already today. And I will tell you, there are models to do this. ACE Academy that serves students from four East Multnomah County school districts, they bring in people from the trades who know how to do this. They bring in people from industry who know how to do this. They bring them in for one day a week, and they provide that particular set of classes that they need. So there are models to do this. Right now, we don't have a system, and we don't have the methodology to actually utilize industry in the way that you can utilize industry. And the beauty of those kinds of arrangements is those people are directly connected to the industry then. The programs directly, but the kids are. So they're going to be connected to the industry. They're not going to need a pathway. They're going to have a pathway if they do well in those classes. So we really need the other pillars, and that is the teachers. And 26-24 is a way to start getting there. So we think that's really important. And finally, we need, and I don't think it's been underscored enough. It was this morning, and I believe the young woman from the home builders up in the gorge addressed it. You have to have time in the day to be able to take these courses. That means you have to get at the course equivalency issue, which is, again, I believe it's Senator Dimbro and Representative Reardon leading with that on 2623. If you don't have the time, we're forcing them into choices that make no sense for these kids. So I think it takes all three. I want to say something about industry. It is often asked. It's been asked here today. It's been asked earlier this morning on the House side, and it's asked in every discussion, industry involvement. I will give you one little association, mine, and what we do. 15 to 20% of our total annual revenues has, for the last 10 years, gone to workforce development programs. We help jumpstart ACE Academy. We help jumpstart all sorts of programs. Why? Because we need those people in our industry. It's not a lot of money. It's $250,000 to $400,000 a year. But it's a big commitment if you look at the percentage of our budget in one issue. The second thing we've done, and I have some cards here that I'll pass out afterwards, we've launched a website to try to reach the kids that don't know about this. It's called Build Oregon. It doesn't even have our logo on it. And it is a way for them to explore and understand the different career paths and get connected to us and to anybody else they need to, including Bowley or anybody else that can help them get on a career path. And then finally, last December, we made national news at the ACE Academy. We opened up the first high school AGC student chapter in the country. So we're doing everything we know how. Industry is not asking for you to do our part. We're asking that you provide us the ability to do our part. And so with that, I'll happy to answer any questions. On the money issue, I believe you have to have at a minimum, and I'm just going to go out here and probably upset some of our great partners in the room, at a minimum, you have to have sustain the Jumpstart Grants program in a substantial way. I don't know what that number is. That depends on a lot bigger number on everything. All the numbers are going, and I believe you have to find a way to permanently fund in a substantial way so that the programs can be built out, the kind of quality programs that Laura Roach, that Brian Krieg, that everybody here has talked about, in particular the two students that were sitting here. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. Any questions for Mr. Rakowitz?
And I just want to say I really appreciate, I have two members of my industry sitting here, and they didn't, it didn't look like I made any real big mistakes, both a contractor and the other side of the industry, the home builders. I appreciate that. And I'm going to hand out these cards.
Great.
So for everybody.
And if they do have any problems, they'll let me know, and I'll pass it on
okay.
to you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you very much for the
thank
time.
Thank you. Okay, everyone, I'm going to close our informational meeting on CTE and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 112. Senate Bill 112 is very closely related to the issue of CTE. It has to do with the creation of a CTE council. And let me just explain to you the background to this very quickly. I'm just going to do it from up here. And let you know just how this bill is developing, and I think in a very positive way. So the original impetus for this bill was for us to be able to have an entity that was like the STEM Investment Council, that is something that would help to steer and help steer STEM programs and do strategic planning for STEM programs around the state, working under the Oregon Education Investment Board. that has been in effect for a couple of years. On the other hand, you know, we have CTE, and we have CTE where we have the CTE Revitalization Committee, which is focusing. It does some coordination, some strategic discussion, also leads the effort on the grant proposals, the grant selections, et cetera, over here. And it just made sense for the purposes of bringing more stability to our investments in CTE to bring that into the same world as the STEM Investment Council. Because as we know, there is a lot of overlap. There's a lot of connection between STEM and CTE. My thinking was that over time, those two entities might merge, actually, that we'd be at a point where, you know, experience would show, you know, these two efforts are mature enough that they really could become one. And, well, as it turned out, in the few months since I first introduced this bill, I've been getting a lot of suggestions from people out there in the field that that future time is now, that we are, in fact, at a point where it makes sense to bring these two together and to have a joint CTE STEM council, which would do the joined work that CTE and STEM do, and in a much more efficient manner, and in a manner where industry knows where they go. You know, because very often the question of what is STEM, what is CTE, is a ridiculously blurred one. So the purpose of this bill will be, once we're through with the amendment process, to create that joint council. And we have a few people who've signed up to speak to that, and I'd like to call them up now. We have John Molis, we have Kim Howard, Joel Fisher, and Eric, is Eric still here? No. Okay, so just you three.
Okay.
Welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Chair Dimbrough and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Howard, and I lead education initiatives for Portland General Electric. And I'm here this afternoon to speak on behalf of Jim Pyro, our CEO and president, who is also the chair of the STEM Investment Council and the co-chair for the CTE STEM Employer Coalition. And I want to be the voice of business in the CTE STEM conversation. In addition to providing safe and reliable energy, PGE continues to be a corporate leader in working toward a vibrant, economically strong community through education initiatives that include specifically improving our CTE and STEM outcomes. We believe that it's imperative to have create a future workforce, as we've already heard, that makes Oregon a competitive force among organizations like PGE, our energy sector, as well as our businesses that are our customers, our manufacturing and industry customers. We're seeing a lot of advances in the energy field that includes, you know, smart grid and other new energy sources that are requiring highly technically skilled employees. And like has already been mentioned, we are seeing those highly skilled employees that are currently at PGE retiring to the tune of 34% overall in the next 5 to 6 years. And in our skilled trades, that are the CTE students of tomorrow, to the tune of 54% in the next 5 to 6 years. We're also seeing a need to attract new talent and a diversified talent pool. CTE and STEM engages students in innovative thinking, and we believe that innovation comes from diversity. We would love to see more women and more people of color in the CTE and STEM fields as well. Oregon students are our students, and investing in CTE and STEM is investing in Oregon's economy. We've already heard that we're importing talent currently, and at PGE we feel like we want to invest in our students here to be the talent of tomorrow. And we have a variety of roles at PGE, from linemen to journeymen to our biologists to our engineers to our technical analysts, that all are CTE and STEM students. And so that we really have been seeing not just the economic vitality of that, where our average worker makes about $80,000 a year, we're also seeing that CTE and STEM is along a continuum. And so when we're advocating for a joint CTE STEM investment council, what we're saying is, yes, that they are both mutually inclusive, but also that very often CTE students become STEM employees, or they become, again, the manufacturers and the construction workers who are our business customers in the future. We're seeing that they're the same teachers, and they can be the same teachers, and we've already heard testimony on that. PGE is pleased to invest in this in a way that is through our community investments, through our PGE Foundation, and also through our corporate sponsorships. This month, in fact, we have sent 44 engineers into two high schools around our service region through National Engineers Month, which is actually showcasing the opportunities for our students, creating clear pathways for them. So when we advocate for this, we're really talking about building a stronger Oregon, both economically, community prosperity, but also individual prosperity. In our communities and on our service area where we're seeing high unemployment rates, we're seeing high percentage of poverty, these clear pathways from CTE through STEM, from college into career or college straight to career or just straight from high school to career, we're seeing these as working opportunities for living wages for our students. And we're also seeing that because the graduation rates are going up, the students have a higher opportunity because they're engaged in their work. The CTE classes, the STEM classes are making it relevant for them, that they're actually staying in school, they're finishing their high school education, and they're seeing opportunities for living wage jobs.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Kim.
You.
John.
Good afternoon, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. My name is John Molis. I represent the Oregon State Building Trades Council. I'm a journeyman bricklayer and stonemason by trade. I had the good fortune to start a union apprenticeship 37 years ago this month. I'm here to testify in favor of the idea of a joint CTE STEM council. And Chair Dembrough, you're right, the conversations have been going on over the past year between CTE representatives and STEM representatives, saying it would just make sense for us to merge these two efforts, both from a mechanical standpoint and just from the perspective that it shouldn't be one or the other. It shouldn't be a competition. It needs to be both. And so how do we join forces and make sure that both of these programs and ideas are funded at the best level and managed at the best level that we can possibly provide? There'll have to be some thought put into this as far as how the representation is structured, and we're dealing with different streams of money that have to be managed and taken care of in different ways, but I just believe it's the right thing to do for efficiency. And I truly believe that once a student in middle school or high school gets the opportunity to take a CTE or a STEM class, once they graduate, they can go to a community college, they can start one of our apprenticeships, they can go to a four-year university, and at the end of their higher education of choice, they can turn out as a machinist or an architect or an engineer or one of our skilled building trades members, and all of those are wins. They're wins for the student, they're wins for the parents, they're wins for the school and the education system, and they're wins for our communities. So I thank you for your time and efforts today in this effort or in this initiative, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much,
Chair Dembrough. Yes. Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher with Oregon Business Association, here to testify in support of Senate Bill 112 and supporting the concept of, looking at CTE and STEM as not two totally separate things, but as two things that have a whole lot in common. I want to back up just a little bit and take you back to the economic forecast that we saw last year, and that Oregon was beginning to pull out of the economic recession, and we were doing okay. And then you separate out Portland and you look at the rest of Oregon, and Portland's doing even better, and the rural parts of Oregon are not doing as well. They're just holding steady, or they're still in economic decline. And so Oregon Business Association partnered with the business plan, OBC, AOI, and we did this rural tour. We went to 11 different regions in Oregon, toured about 17 different cities, met with local business owners, held economic development forums to ask people, what are the real issues here that the state needs to be taking on? And the number one issue that came up everywhere we went was workforce. And a couple of the issues were things, like we've got to, I want to hire 10 welders, and I just can't find people with those skills. And so that's, one of the things that we can be doing with CTE, and want to be hiring engineers, and we can't find people with those skills. But it's also, the soft skills, showing up to work on time, not calling in sick on a day when you pick up a paycheck, being able to dress properly and speak properly. And so I'd like to share a little story, my own experience. I went to Benson Polytechnic High School and studied photography there for 2 years and did a number of other CTE courses. And one of the projects was due. It was due at 10 a.m. The teacher, let us know well ahead of time. This is a whole quarter, semester worth of work. And he's up there and he's counting down 3, 2, 1. And my project comes in, just a half second after he says 1, and he marks me down a whole grade for it. And I was flabbergasted. And I was upset. And he sat me down and explained to me that, it's my job to teach you real world skills. And you were late. The project wasn't on time. And so you're getting knocked down a grade. And he told us that beforehand. And it was, as upset as I was, it was a really important lesson that he had taught me. If you've gone out and talked with these students, they're learning these lessons. They're learning these hard skills on how to work a 3D printer, and they're also learning that they need to do these other soft skills that we heard time and time again from employers that people needed to know. Senator Canova and I had a conversation. He asked some of these students what they wanted to do, and one wanted to go on and do something completely different than the 3D printing stuff that she was working on, but she let us know, she was there for the leadership skills that she was learning in career technical education. Really incredible stuff. A lot of these students, some of them they have the ability to go straight from the programs that they're working on in high school straight into the workforce. Some of them are going on for higher education, whether it's community college or engineering or at a four-year university. And that was my own experience at Benson High School. We had, students kind of going a little bit everywhere, but consistently they were better prepared to be entering the workforce. And a lot of them even, straight out of high school, became electricians, and they bought houses a decade ago when I was still in college. So Senator DeBro, thank you for your hard work, and you've had a lot of great vision on this, and we support Senate Bill 112. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Okay, thank you all three of you for coming forward.
Thank you.
And we will be working on amendments to this to come up with the new joint council. Hopefully we'll have it for you in the next couple of weeks. So with that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 112. And we have a couple of quick work sessions we have to do. First, a work session on Senate Bill 185, which you'll remember is the social media bill that we heard last week. We did have amendments drafted to provide some added clarification about just what we're talking about here, just to make things easier on our colleagues over on the other side of the building. Vice Chair Thatcher.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated February 24, 2015 for Senate Bill 185.
Okay, Vice Chair Thatcher moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated February 24, 2015. Matt, could you just tell us what's in those?
Sure. The -1 amendments defines personal social media account and the term social media. The fiscals are ready to go, and this bill is ready to be passed.
Okay. Any discussion? Any questions? I see we have the presenter in the audience. Is she a thumbs up on this? Her thumb is up for the record. Is there any objection to our adopting the -1 amendments? Okay, seeing none, they are adopted. Vice Chair Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 185 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Thatcher moves Senate Bill 185 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to this bill going to the floor? Seeing none, so ordered, it will go. Who'd like to carry it?
I'll carry it, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Senator Boquist? I don't know. Since he's intimately involved
with
it, I'm just wondering. I don't know.
I'll tentatively assign it to Senator Knope, and if Senator Boquist has a burning desire to do it, he can just send me a text or a Twitter or, whatever.
A Twitter.
To your personal account?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to close the work session. Yes?
I just wanted to appreciate this hearing for a new vocabulary word that I hadn't heard before, and it's a new favorite word, stimposium.
I think, is a keeper.
That's great. Okay, so I closed the work session on that bill. I'm going to open a work session to introduce committee measures. We have one last LC to provide. So I'll open that work session. This is LC 2325.
Did you want me to move it? Or?
Yeah, could you please?
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 2325, dated February 25th, 2015, be introduced as a committee bill.
Vice Chair Thatcher moves LC 2325 be introduced as a committee bill. Any discussion? Remember, colleagues, this is in signifying no objection, you are simply putting this bill into the process.
Are you saying it doesn't guarantee that it will get a hearing or even be assigned to this committee?
I cannot rule that out, by Senator Gelser. Okay, is there any objection to this LC being introduced? Okay, seeing none, it is so introduced. Colleagues, thank you for your interest and rapt attention to our presenters today in this great topic. And with that, we are adjourned.
Will you keep bringing kids like every day? Will you keep bringing kids like every day?